Hello, I'm Juliette Mann, and this is the Agenda Podcast, CGTN Europe's one-stop shop for smart, in-depth discussion of the issues that really matter in the world today. It was close, but Recep Tayyip Erdogan has extended his grip on presidential power in Turkey. In spite of deep divisions across the country and severe economic woes, Erdogan was handed another mandate for the next 5 years. But what does this victory mean for the people of Turkey and its relations with the wider world? Well, to discuss that, I'm joined by Murat Aslan, a senior researcher at the SETA Foundation, and Ozan Ozkurul, founder and managing partner of Tanto Capital Partners. Gentlemen, great to see both of you. Murat, I'll start with you. You know, why was this election talked about as being the most consequential in Turkey's recent history? What's at stake?
Well, first, I have to confess one thing. It was a democratic feast because everybody competed in a fair way, even though there were some harsh sentiments by the mouth of the politicians in here. Well, they competed and people were very happy while casting their votes. Even entering building or leaving building doesn't matter. So it was a democratic festival right now. And this election has become one essential dispute, one essential argument that it will be a turning point in the history of Turkish political history. And this was the allegation of the opposition, mainly the Millet Alliance led by Kılıçdaroğlu. But I don't see it as such because we have elections in every 5 years and you can even change any governing authority by voting. So I don't think that. On the other hand, that's the third term of Erdogan. That means they are expecting some fundamental changes in the state system, though. Erdogan clearly says no. So that's why there was a sort of exaggeration in the mouth of opposition. And one final thing, up until now, Erdogan led country like 21, 22 years. So the opposition, the main opposition party, lost the elections like 12 times. Yeah. So it has been another defeat in the elections. So they can't explain it to their backers. That's the story, yeah. I believe.
Yet many observers expected Erdogan's two-decade rule to end with this election. So, Ozan, I wonder, how has he managed to defy the odds? And what do you think the next 5 years are going to look like?
Look, I think he has managed to defy the odds in a way because ultimately he knows how to do politics with the population he has under his hands. I think the main question that we are asking as investors globally is what will the Turkish monetary policy look like? And especially in the context of what's happening around the world vis-a-vis a much more fragile economy, risk of inflation, and basically capital trying to reprice risk across the board. There are expectations and hopes that Turkey will somewhat revert into a more, I would say, orthodox monetary policy, i.e. Management of the interest rate environments, although the president has said that he's refusing to increase the interest rates. The other side of the argument, of course, is what will happen to the Turkish lira and FX, and what kind of packages or incentive packages the country will ultimately structure. Because, look, Turkey is a large country. It's obviously geostrategically a very important country. And economically, investors love nothing more than a credible reform story.
Murat, I wanted to ask you, particularly as you're in Gaziantep, if you expected that the government's response to the handling of the devastating earthquakes earlier this year to be more significantly reflected at the ballot box. Most of the areas that were affected were traditional Erdogan strongholds.
Well, yes, there are 11 provinces at the south of the country devastated by the earthquakes. There were three earthquakes, by the way, in 2 days. And it was a stronghold of AK Party government. And, you know, there was an expectation, especially in the eyes of the opposing parties, that the degree of support to Erdogan would go down. But it didn't happen. And in the second round, well, especially the Hatay city, traditionally very close to CHP or Kılıçdaroğlu's political pattern, they voted in favor of Erdogan. Why? Because the first issue, they expected a government strong enough to build houses. The second issue, right after the first round, the opposition just accused the victims of the earthquake favoring Erdogan with a harsh statements. And then what happened? The victims favored Erdogan. That's the crystal clear issue in here. And what will happen right after then? I believe that the victims will try to oversee if the governmental projects on housing the people will keep continue or not, because we will have another elections in 2024 for the municipalities. So it will be decisive in these 11 provinces.
Let's talk more about the economy. There is economic growth, but inflation in Turkey is still eye-wateringly high. Consumers have really felt the pinch of the cost of living crisis, particularly in the housing sector. The economy really is going to be that big issue to deal with, isn't it, Ozan?
Well, look, I mean, economy is a major issue for a lot of governments around the world to deal with right now, whether it's the Western governments or Turkey or even in the other parts of the world. And let's not forget that we are facing a global situation where we are even talking about the plausibility of a U.S. government default. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, but we are talking about it. And here, what I would say is that maybe perhaps more important than ever before, we will focus on Turkey's geopolitical ally structure. Again, we live in a world where, the concept of friendshoring, nearshoring is a thing, and Turkey's relationships, especially within certain Gulf countries, are going to probably play a prominent role in being able to prop up the economy going forwards. Finally, to answer the final part of your question when it comes to inflation, look, there are no easy solutions for any government around the world to deal with this. We have been living in a world since the end of 2008 where cheap money, free money, and printing a lot of money was the norm. And it's just going to be difficult for the whole global system to just come out of what was and transfer and travel into what is to come.
You talk about what was and what is to come. I mean, Erdogan was very much seen by the West and investors as a forward thinker, certainly in the first decade of his rule, having a fresh approach, especially when it came to the economy. And he rode that wave of economic boom. But now his dogged, some say unorthodox, stance on interest rates has really flummoxed the market and will continue to do so. So how do you think investor perceptions might change of him, Ozan? Mm-hmm.
Look, I think investors have the perception that he will continue, as he said, by the way, in his election campaign over and over again, he will continue with, what we call an unorthodox monetary policy. Now, that would be fine if Turkey had a significant current account surplus. But Turkey runs a current account deficit, which always needs to be financed, which is why I basically wanted to focus on the geopolitical ally structure that is going to be more important in being able to decipher and solve for an equation where the monetary policy is likely to remain unorthodox. However, at the moment, no one knows. But let us also underline one technical matter here. Even if the Turkish government and Turkish Central Bank, I should say, were to revert to orthodox monetary policies and wanted to increase interest rates, because of the current loan composition of Turkish bank balance sheets, that hike and that prospective rise in interest rates will have to take time. And throughout that time, funding gaps will have to be filled. So we are looking forward to understanding what kind of structures and packages government will put forward for that.
So, Murat Aslan, does Erdogan have the right pool of people around him to get the economy back on track?
Turkey, at the end of the day, is 85 million people, and there are a lot of names in their financial markets or politics, so I think there's no problem. But the issue in here, Erdogan is in search of, compatible, and in the meantime, a consistent individual, especially of his thinking. Well, I think Erdogan will review exactly what he's going to do in terms of politics, foreign policy, economy, and the other sectors as well. and he's trying to find, you know, or build up a new team, maybe much more responsible to fix the things that are not that much good up until now. Economy is one field, I believe. As Mr. Ozan said, he's in a search of new name. Maybe Mehmet Bey, you know, the new probable finance minister, maybe somebody else. But on the other hand, I think we should not only focus on the economy, but there are a bunch of things should be concentrated and orchestrated. For instance, foreign policy cannot be isolated from economy because Turkey feels to intervene in the problems in the vicinity of the borders, and it requires a great economic infrastructure inside the country. Another issue, currently Turkey needs an infrastructural renovation because they promise people to build much more you know, perfect roads or railroads, etc. In this sense, there's a comprehensive thinking in Turkish politics right now that can address all sorts of investments, all sorts of engagements. And I believe that it requires a crew, and we have it. I mean, there's no problem with the names.
So, Ozan, where does Turkey need to invest now to become more future-proof?
Look, I mean, that answer is very simple. And it's the same answer for many countries around the world. Investing in innovation and creating or making Turkey more of an innovation hub is the sure way thing of having a future-proof economy. I mean, look, we live in very interesting times. We live in times where technological developments and disruption across the board will impact all of our lives and will impact the economies and also the geopolitical alliance structures of countries around the world. So I would rank innovation and obviously in the longer term, parallel to that, education are as the two very important areas to invest in. Now, the reality, of course, is for significant and what I would call sticky FDI, so not hot money inflows, but long-term FDI to come into the country, investors will need to understand what kind of a playing field they have in front of them. To a certain extent, the fact that we now know what the political structures of the country could look like over the next 5 years will help, but there has to be clear and effective communication from the government in putting investors at ease as to what that terrain will look like over the next 5 years.
We're going to pause there, gentlemen. And Ozan, I know you have to go, so thank you very much for your time. Really
sure,
interesting insights there. But Murat Aslan, stay with us, as still to come here on the agenda, we'll find out what Erdogan's re-election means for relations with the rest of the world.
Ever wondered what's the difference between a bear and a bull market? Where are the cash cows? And who are the lame ducks? And what exactly are black swans? Grey rhinos? And unicorn companies? Make sense of it all with Global Business, only on CGTN.
Welcome back to The Agenda. Let's continue our discussion on what President Erdogan's latest victory means for Turkey and the wider world. Still with me is Murat Aslan, a senior researcher at the SETA Foundation. And I'm also joined now by Ahmet Kasim Han, the Professor of International Relations at Beykoz University. Gentlemen, let's dive in. Professor Han, you know, Turkey is one of the EU's largest and most strategically important neighbours, a NATO member and a candidate for EU membership. But the relationship has been tricky over the last decade or so. What do you think this election result is going to mean for relations between Turkey and the EU?
I think that the EU countries will be feeling forced to work with the new Erdogan government. That is going to bring some sort of leniency to the relationship, but I am not sure if that is going to be enough for Turkey to advance its interests, exactly because of all the things that you have discussed in your previous section on the economy. Turkey is very fragile when it comes to economy. It lacks credibility. A new team, however credible internationally, will have quite a lot of hardships in overcoming the international suspicion against the Turkish economic policies, which is widely shared by the funders. In these, in this context, I would find it hard for Turkey to pursue an autonomous and independent foreign policy. At least Turkey will have to rely on one of the two camps, and probably in this case, the camp that will be relied on will be more to the north and the east of Turkey, which would mean the relations with Russia and China is going to provide more to Turkey than its relations with the West. And it will be very hard for the Erdogan government, however pragmatic, to turn its existing rhetoric against the West to one of cooperation and one of solid relationship with its Western partners.
I wonder what you think about that, Murat, because, you know, despite those sources of friction from Turkey's relationship with Russia to reticence over NATO expansion, you know, Turkey and the EU are major trading partners. So how do you think the election outcome is going to affect that and maybe shift the focus?
Well, there is a reality. Turkey is waiting at the gate of EU for more than 60 years. So that means Turkey did not lose the hope, though not that much optimistic to be a member state. On the other hand, there is another reality. Turkey has to observe the relations with EU because there's a great potential, and the existing level of trade, exchange of cultures or resonation with the EU or European countries individually, it's really significant. On the other hand, latest one decade in Turkish history is a sort of trauma for Turkish political thinking. And it's not only about economy, but about what? Communicating briefly. And that's why Turkish current position in foreign policy, strategic autonomy, well, it may be somehow realistic or not, but it's a fact. And I know that the West and the United States is not that much happy with this.
What's your take on this in terms of Turkey's relationship in the region and in the rest of the world?
Basically, as I said, the country is fragile when it comes to the most important aspects of maintaining your international presence. The first one of these is economy. The second one is its existing relations with its institutional partners. We have to keep in mind that throughout the campaign, the rhetoric of the government was highly tuned in with an anti-Western, anti-American rhetoric. I don't think that that might create, that would create a larger, as expected, kind of fringe between the parties, between the West and between Turkey. However, Turkey chooses to pursue its foreign policy path, it will be a choice between concessions and consolidations. Concessions meaning Turkey will decide on conceding on some of its very strong rhetorics, be it the one on Sweden or in Syria, to different parties. If you choose to concede in Syria, for example, you will have to get in communication with the Assad government, which seems like the only path for Turkey to choose its staggering refugee problem. If you, on the other hand, choose to concede to the West, then you will have to take a harder stance against Russia, which is going to hurt Turkey's economic interests. So it's a choice between a rock and a hard place, to be honest, and it is not going to be easy. However, I do not find Turkey's existing foreign policy, which is somehow could be characterized as muddling through in a balancing act between the two parties, between the West and Russia and the rest, juggling between those two parties, becoming increasingly unmaintainable in the near run.
You mentioned migration. I'd like to pick up on that with you, though, Murat, because Turkey does have the highest number of migrants in the world. So can we expect any policy changes on that front?
I believe that it has already changed because the initial narrative of the Erdogan government was to host them, like treating them like a guest. But today they are talking about building up cities at the north of Syria. And there's a harsh policy, at least, to revert back the illegal immigrants coming from Afghanistan, even though it will determine who is legal or illegal if you don't capture them, by the way. But I see that the Erdogan's policy to have returns back to Syria, you know, it's just like, you know, having a smooth process, facilitate people by building up a political process with Assad regime, even though it's not realistic because Assad will never be compliant to any demand having the people back from Turkey, because his ultimate goal was to vacate the land from the Sunni Arabs. So that's why at least there's an attempt to communicate with him. On the other hand, Turkey must be prepared for the worst case scenarios. So if Assad is not on the same page with Erdogan, I believe that military options will be on the table to be discussed, especially facilitate the returnees go back to their countries and have the terrorism in Syria be isolated or at least repelled. In this case, it's a very difficult and tough problem to deal with.
Both of you have talked about China and Turkey's relationship with China. Murat, you mentioned infrastructure projects, and that's why, Ahmet, I want to talk to you about where you see that relationship growing, especially with regard to the Belt and Road Initiative.
Turkey definitely would like to benefit from that initiative, but again, in the existing fragility of economy, it will not be able to provide enough leverage to China, and that again becomes a concession problem. What are you going to hand over to China to finance some of the projects that is already out there, most of whose feasibility is questionable, like Kanal Istanbul, for example, the Istanbul Channel that is fabled. So again, we are left between where to consolidate Turkey's relations, a question of where to consolidate Turkey's relations, and where to concede from Turkey's interests. I do not think that Turkey can force its hands too much when it comes to using coercion more than it already did in terms of its foreign policy. So it's all a checks and balances and trade-offs process that is expecting us also when it comes to Turkey's relations with China.
Now, Murat, I know that there is a very long list, but what would you say is the biggest challenge for Turkey's new government, domestically, but also internationally?
Well, it's really a tough question. Today, yeah, economy is the number one issue, because all citizens, at least the voters of the 2024 municipality elections, they are concerned with the economy, because if you do not satisfy the expectations of the voters, well, you will lose it. The second issue, what is the security and stability, because Turkey perceives a lot, threat, either from terrorism or some other developments that Turkey cannot fully in charge with it. Think that if you just count the number of headlines in Turkish foreign policy's agenda, it's more than 30. I mean, Turkish foreign policy should deal with the events or situations in the meantime that is scattered to the three regions and three seas. I mean, Caucasus, Balkans and the Middle East, Black Sea, Eastern Mediterranean and Aegean Sea. That's why, other than economy, I believe, foreign policy and security will be a united theme to be dealt with in the coming 5 years, because Turkey has to be active in responding to the threats in this region.
Ahmet Khan, the same question to you. What do you think the big challenge is going to be for Turkey at home and abroad?
At home, definitely economy. The government asked the population, the voters, to forget about the economy for the sake of preserving a perceived threat towards Turkey's independence and security. And it seems like the electorate has bought this idea. But definitely they would be pursuing what is happening on the economy front very closely. They'll be watching very closely. And they will want to see whether or not the government is able to deliver on that front as it promised. Because I don't think that this consolidation over polarization policy might work for the government, especially in the coming municipal elections. Internationally speaking, the challenges are twofold. One is with Russia and Russia-related issues, or issues where Russia might be called to be more dominant in the outcomes of, and in the same way, U.S.-related issues, U.S. and the West-related issues. The biggest challenge when it comes to the Russia issue or the Russian side of the equation is Syria and the refugee problem. That is the biggest foreign policy challenge on that front. When it comes to Turkey's relations with the West, I think that the Ukrainian crisis, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and all the issues related to that, including but not limited to the Turkish participation to the embargo against Russia, will be an issue there. And that will highly affect Turkey's relations with its Western partners.
Murat Aslan, I'm going to give you the last word. I'd like you to get out your crystal ball. What would the best case and worst case scenario be for Turkey in 5 years' time, at the end of this term?
Well, it's worst or best case, doesn't matter. It's not only on Turkey, but there are some developments that Turkey cannot control. For instance, we have to expect a global economic recession in the coming 5 years. And for sure, all countries across the globe will somehow face it. And Turkey is not an exception. So I think the challenge comes from the global transformation, structural transformation. This is the first issue. The second thing, well, it's the regional issues. You know, we are talking about regional complexes in literature. But here in Turkey, Turkey has to deal with, you know, differing different regions in the meantime, like the Middle East and Caucasus. And I think that once something happens in the Middle East, it does provoke other developments globally. This is the worst case. I mean, dealing with multi-layered and very complex political problems or military escalations. This is the worst case if combined with the Turkish vulnerabilities like economy. But the best case, if the government appears as eligible to sustain the current status and convert exactly the current economic status to another platform, another ground, well, I think we can talk about an optimism. But I don't think that the globe is going to somewhere that we can't be optimistic, so we must be prepared for the worst case scenario. That's the crystal clear issue.
Murat Aslan from the SETA Foundation, thank you very much. And thank you too to Ahmet Han, Professor of International Relations at Beykoz University. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Agenda podcast. Do join me next week when we'll be talking climate finance and asking what the world needs to do to save the planet ahead of COP28 in Dubai. Remember, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find more Agenda content on CGTN Europe's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Telegram, and YouTube channels. Until next time, goodbye.
The most interesting questions.
Are there other living beings beyond Earth?
Will man or machine be in charge?
Great question.
Always have more than one answer.
Well, hold on, let me just draw up a list.
And always come from more than one person.
That's where the credibility lies.
The concept of having a machinery which is alive and evolving didn't wait for us.
The end of inequality of incomes and wealth around the world, can you imagine how difficult that is at the moment to achieve?
Every episode, Stephen Cole, Murray Beveridge, and some of the brightest minds out there shed light on the answers to some of the most intriguing questions.
There are two ways of looking at this.
Machines can't really discriminate between civilian and military targets.
The Answers Project.
Maybe we need to just look at this in a bit more detail.
Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
The Answers Project, a new podcast from CGTN Europe.